Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Brumker v. Schwan's Home Service. Ms. Hearn?
May it please this Court. My name is Anna Hearn, and I represent Frank Brumker, a man who has multiple sclerosis, also known as MS. MS is a chronic degenerative disease of the central nervous system that has no cure. MS, for a majority of the people, gets worse over time. It is an autoimmune disorder that attacks a person's healthy system and nervous system. It causes lesions on the spinal cord and on the brain. Approximately 400,000 people in the United States are affected by MS, and an additional 200 people per week are diagnosed. Worldwide, approximately 2.5 million people have MS. People with the type of MS Brumker has, it's called relapsing MS. They go through a period that they have flare-ups and symptoms, and it's called relapse attacks or exacerbations. These episodes are acute worsening of neurological functions. Then they go and they get better, but the symptoms do not go away, and then they flare up again. Now, as time goes on, for a majority of these individuals who have a relapsing MS, the symptoms then do not cease and get worse over the years. Brumker experiences the classic symptoms of multiple sclerosis. He has loss of balance and muscle coordination. It makes him difficult to walk and stand. He has numbness and tingling. He has shaking of the hands, major shaking of the hands, so bad that he, writing utensils as he writes down people's orders at Schwan's, his writing utensil flings out of his hand, and some of the route managers at Schwan's would make fun of Brumker when he was working and say, why don't we just give Brumker a glass of milk, so he can make a milkshake. He has problems cooking when he has his flare-ups, bathing. He has problems urinating. He has problems walking. His leg would drag. When he would speak to his customers or speak to people several times a day, his speech would begin to slur.
Well, does that have anything to do with his alleged failure to call on most or all of his customers?
We dispute that he did, because there is evidence in the record that from some route managers that he was actually servicing his customers. We have Jackie Spratley, Barry Dwyer's affidavit. We also have Dennis Tice saying, who is the district manager of Schwan, saying he did a good job. He was a good employee. He was a hard worker, and his sales were going up. There is also evidence in the record that when Brumker came back from his leave, a lot of his customers and his handheld were deleted. So he couldn't service customers if they're not in his computer system or on his route.
Ms. Hearn, what is your best evidence that Schwan's regarded him as substantially limited in a major life activity? In other words, I think it would be helpful to us if you identified a particular major life activity and then gave us your best evidence that Schwan's regarded him as substantially limited in that area.
What Schwan's believed, I think there's multiple things that led up to what they truly believed. I think it begins when he started getting the flare-ups and he had to take time off from work. During that time, when he took time off in February of 2002, they had already had discussions of terminating Mr. Brumker from Schwan's if he couldn't come back without restrictions. That was with Mazur and Dennis Tice. After he gets back, he was never written up prior to them. During a period of time, they had to accommodate him from a period of time that was Chuck Ramey, who was the supervisor. He admits that in his deposition. When Brumker finally, and Ramey also says, you know, there would be times that Brumker would come to me and says he's not feeling well, and I would have to accommodate him. And he also, Schwan's was aware that he was going to the Mayo Clinic. And when Schwan's When Brunker told them that he was going to the Mayo Clinic, that's when their attitude changed against him dramatically. The very immediately thereafter, they wrote him up.
Mayo Clinic say about his physical condition?
That he had MS.
We don't have much information on that.
There is a report in from Dr. Think Kroger that says he does have MS, and that when Brunker went to the Mayo Clinic, he complained of his foot dragging, dizziness, headaches, same types of symptoms that we are discussing that he experienced throughout his employment. Now, the day before he left for the Mayo Clinic, then this is, I think, very important. He was written up 4 times on September 8th. And one for an item that happened 8 months prior. And now, September 9th was his last day before he went to the Mayo Clinic. And in Volume 6, I believe it's page 1268 in Volume 6. Let me see if it's 1268. Just wanted to make sure. It's 1268 in Volume 6. There is a termination report to payroll to backdate to say his termination date was September 9th, the last day of his employment, as his last day of his employment with Schwann's. That's the day he left for the Mayo Clinic. Now, going back to, you know, whether he was failing to serve his customers, I think a genuine issue of fact exists, whether there's an inference, because Ramey said it.
Well, of course, Judge Moody decided the case, I think, on the ground that his disability, if any, was intermittent or episodic or something of that sort. What's your comment? There is some case law that supports that approach.
Well, I respectfully disagree.
There's some case law that doesn't, I think. But
I disagree on that, respectfully disagree on that. MS is a permanent disease that doesn't go away, unlike in Van Zandt, a broken arm. Or depression in Ogborn, which they used, that was a 6-week bout of depression. Today, to this day, Brunker still has MS, and Brunker will always have MS. The day he was terminated, from February to the day he was terminated, he had MS, and he had the symptoms of MS.
Well, in your response to Judge Cudahy, I'm not sure I'm tracking it, Ms. Hearn. Is it your position just because a person is afflicted with MS that for a fortiori, a major life activity has been impaired?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Could you speak to this episodic issue of whether or not his condition was one that only occasionally flared up that impacted his work?
It didn't occasionally flare up. It affected him several times a day, and any time from a half hour to 4 hours per day, he was getting afflicted by his symptoms.
It's a daily affliction.
It's a daily episodic, intermittent act. That's what I'm talking about with respect.
So Judge Moody's read on that is incorrect.
It is incorrect. And if you review the records, you review his deposition, the medical records, and even Chuck Ramey's deposition and the affidavits that were submitted by the other route managers, they said his limitations were visible. You could see he had slurring of the speech at times. His foot would drag. This happened several times a day. It didn't happen, in January and then in May. It happened several times a day, and it affected him anywhere between a half hour to 4 hours per day. One thing with respect to, I think the timing itself, based on his write-ups and when they start, I think him going to the Mayo Clinic really was the straw that broke the camel's back with regarded as clause. You know, he starts getting written immediately. You have testimony from other route managers that their attitude towards Brunker changed. Ramey was becoming very rude to him. He was upset if he had to accommodate him. He said his attitude was if Brunker couldn't do the job, he didn't want him around, type of thing. And then right before, the day before he was to leave at the Mayo Clinic, he was written up 4 times. And then he was notified of his termination the day he came back. I think all this evidence shows an inference that they regarded Brunker as being disabled. With the ADA, with him being disabled, just them considering Brunker being disabled himself, we all know that MS is a physical impairment. The multiple major life activities were affected, and it is our position, based on what I had just have told you, that he was substantially limited. I mean, he couldn't see at times, and that happened, you know, one or two times a day. He couldn't write at times. He couldn't speak. He had problems walking at times through the day.
Did he drive to and from work?
He drove, but sometimes he had a driving restriction. And so that sometimes he couldn't drive the Schwann's truck because they had to get another driver to help him. And they knew this. They had, even Ramey in his deposition during his employment, the one who terminated, said, yes, sometimes I did accommodate or put a driver in for Brunker when he was not feeling well or he had a headache. His headaches were so horrific he couldn't even get out of bed at times. I mean, so this happened on a daily basis. This affected him on a daily basis, and this was just not a once every 6 month thing. Now, another thing that we did ask for, going back to the regarded as, see how they treated other disabled employees. There was an employee by the name of Devereaux which was terminated because he was asking to go to the doctor. And there was evidence by some affidavits from other route managers that they terminated him because of his disability. And Dennis Tye said, yeah, he's no longer working there because he had some disease. Now, it goes to the 56F motion. We asked for discovery. During discovery, we asked for discovery regarding personnel files of other route managers. Other route managers in the Valpo Depot. There's only 28 employees in the Valparaiso Depot. We're not asking for something that was overburdensome. 28 employees. They said none of it was relevant. And we also asked for personnel files for the same type of infractions they claim Mr. Brunker committed, from inaccurate route books, not keeping up to the dress code, depositing an insufficient check, which occurred over 8 months prior that they disciplined him for, and other things. They said it wasn't relevant. And I said, well, we think it is relevant because it goes to the expectations and it shows every element of the case. Additionally, we also asked for evidence on people who were also disabled, and to help prove the regarded as clause and every other element of the case, similarly situated pattern and practice, and asked for light duty restrictions. They refused to give that to us, too.
How tailored was the request? What was the time frame that you sought?
Initially, we probably asked for 5 to 10 years, but then we restricted it to the time that Mr. Brunker worked there. And they still did not give it to us. Now, 5 days prior to us filing the motion to compel, they limited their reasons to terminating Brunker to only one, failing to serve his customers, even though they had represented to the EEOC that they listed all these reasons for terminating Brunker. They also, during Brunker's deposition, they asked him ad nauseum about all the reasons that he was not performing his job. And then they told the district court that, don't worry, we are limiting it to the reasons to terminating to just one, failing to serve his customers. And that, you know, Brunker didn't ask for an accommodation also, so he should not be allowed to have the files of other people disabled people's files or people who ask for restrictions. If you look in their appellate brief before you, they admit that he did ask for an accommodation. Now, I did a motion, we got it sanctioned about $4,423. And I did a motion to reconsider. I also asked for the supervisor's files, 4 supervisors that Brunker had. I did a motion to reconsider. It was granted in part so I could get Dennis Tye's personnel file, but it was denied for everything else. And in that motion to reconsider, I said, you know what, if they're going to limit it to just one, then they should not be able to use those reasons in their motion for summary judgment or at trial. The court, in response, said, you know, if that happens, file a 56F motion. You have other remedies.
Now, why did you ask for all route managers' personnel files for the Valparaiso Depot from 1991 to the present? Isn't that going far beyond what you needed?
We wanted to see what their treatment of to their, if they fired anyone for failing to service customers. We later then limited it to during his employment. But it was to the Valparaiso route managers only. At summary judgment, the defendant did just what I said that they were going to. They put every reason why, all the write-ups in. They also said that Barry Dwyer, who they staunchly fought to keep out that route manager book personnel file out, they didn't give me the entire file. They gave me a few pages of write-ups. And Barry Dwyer said, wait, not only did I have limitations, I was fired right after I settled a workers' comp claim. They then, in the reply, also submitted portions of Devereaux's file, which they refused. I asked for Devereaux's file specifically. They refused to give to me. Now,
you can continue, but you're into your rebuttal time. It's your time. You use it as you see fit, but I just wanted to remind you.
All right. Thank you. I believe the discovery we did ask for was substantially justified. The court granted as they denied our motion for 56F, even though they told us to file it, and they said it was at moot, and they also denied our request to get our sanctions back, even though they expanded the reasons that they specifically said that they weren't going to use. And that issue was not moot before the court. So we asked that summary judgment be reversed, vacated, or in the alternative, it still needs to be vacated, and that we so we could get the discovery we need to defend this case. Thank you,
Ms. Ernst. Ms. Wilson.
May it please the court. I'm Heather Wilson. I'm with the law firm of Locke Reynolds, and I'm here on behalf of Appley, Schwann's Home Service, Inc.
Could we start with the discovery issues?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, because Ms. Wilson, I have to tell you, I am absolutely mystified by the magistrate's annoyance with Brunker's discovery requests. As the amicus pointed out quite succinctly, everything this man sought in discovery is standard routine materials. His requests may have been overly broad in some respects, but that really doesn't give an opposing party a license to reject the requests outright. Instead, the defendant should have produced the relevant material and provided specific objections to the remainder. For example, the personnel files for the route managers that went back to 1991 when his termination took place in 2003. You could have objected to the time frame and then provided only files from the relevant time period. I haven't seen anything like this.
Sure, Your Honor. First of all, the personnel files were just one of many items that Mr. Brunker was moving in his motion to compel. And I think if you read the district court's two orders, the first order denying the motion to compel and the order for reconsideration, you get a flavor because the district court, as well as my client, were very frustrated with Mr. Brunker's continued harassing what the district court called wholly unjustified in his request, manifestly unreasonable and harassing, and his position was not substantially justified.
Well, I'm going to say something that's very painful. That opinion could only have been written by someone who never litigated a case. I was absolutely stunned by it. The employer's reason here for terminating Mr. Brunker was a moving target. And Brunker was fully entitled to discover all of the evidence that he requested on the various reasons that were given. An employer cannot limit discovery by voluntarily conceding a particular reason for the termination. That's absurd. In fact, our court has held that the employer shifting reasons for a termination is just perfect evidence of pretext. Perfect evidence of pretext.
Your Honor, I would disagree that Schwann's wasn't consistent in the reasons for its termination. If you look back at...
You narrowed the reasons in order to avoid discovery, didn't you?
But we did provide, Your Honor...
I'm not sure the propriety of that.
We did provide, after Mr. Brunker refused to narrow his request from 1991 to the present, we on our own went ahead and provided the personnel files for 12 of the route managers. And the way we came up with that was we looked at who was employed at the time that Mr. Brunker was terminated, and during that time, Mr. Ramey, of course, was his supervisor. Mr. Ramey was his supervisor from, I believe, May until September of 2003. We provided all of that information. So to the extent that Mr. Brunker would need information about who was written up for route books, who was written up for appearance, they would have that information if those people indeed were written up.
Well, that may be true, but in principle, do you think it's appropriate? Originally, it was you complained that he was fired because he didn't keep the route books and there's a third ground. I can't remember what it was. But you narrowed your allegations when you found out the breadth of his discovery request. Now, I'm not sure that that's a proper thing to do. It seems to me that that itself is subject to a lot of abuse if you want to abuse it. So I question whether that was appropriate. Now, he may have gotten all the information he wanted anyway. That's really another issue. But I'm asking you, was it appropriate for you to abandon these other reasons that you gave for firing him merely to narrow the amount of discovery that he could be expected to be entitled to?
Well, again, I would respectfully disagree that we somehow narrowed. If you look at our brief, page 30...
Yeah, that's clear, didn't it? You just withdrew several grounds for firing him.
Ultimately, he was fired for failing to service customers.
Ended up with. But you had the root records were another ground that you alleged originally.
We have never disputed the fact that Mr. Brunker had some performance issues. In fact, if you look at our answers to the second set of interrogatories, where we responded that to interrogatory number 3, Schwann's explains that plaintiff was not ultimately terminated for inaccurate route books, but for failing to service numerous customers on his route. We said up front that was the ultimate reason for his termination. But going back to the motion to compel, I think it's very important. There were numerous issues that were being compelled, not just the personnel records. Mr. Brunker actually threatened sanctions against my client if we didn't provide a final list of witnesses and exhibits that we planned on using for trial. He continued to ask for route books when we told him that the route books were a a document that changes. At route books are continued to be updated. That was another request.
Look, even now, to this moment, and certainly in the appellate briefs, you discuss evidence of a number of disciplinary problems with Mr. Brunker, but below, you refuse to provide discovery related to those reasons. How can his request for discovery be unjustified when you are using some of the very information you refuse to give him? It seems to me that once you claim that the man is unkempt or kept poor route books or cashed checks too early, you have to provide records about how you handled non-disabled employees who committed the same infractions. And that just wasn't done here.
Your Honor, we did provide 12 information for 12 route managers that were employed at the time that Mr. Brunker was terminated, who were supervised by Mr. Ramey. So we have provided the information that was either relevant or reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. We didn't feel that we needed to provide the personnel files for route managers going back to 1991. We provided information on 12 route managers. With respect to Mr. Devereaux wasn't even employed at the time Mr. Ramey began as a supervisor at the Valparaiso Depot. That's why his personnel file wasn't provided. And we told Mr. Brunker that he was not similarly situated. And as the district court found, you know, the information that Mr. Brunker was seeking was not relevant because it wasn't related to similarly situated individuals.
Well, but you made that decision. You made a decision. You didn't hand over the information that could have been used to possibly impeach potential witnesses. You know, I'm thinking about one very odd statement from the magistrate as I sit here, which was that Brunker was not entitled to more information about Zasbo's termination because more information may come out on the stand if Zasbo were to testify. Well, Brunker was clearly entitled to any information he could use to impeach a potential witness. And parties aren't required to wait until a witness is on the stand to learn these things. This discovery sanction is beyond not being justified, in my view.
With respect to Mr. Zoltan Szabo, he was a supervisor in early January of 2003. He was not even employed, 8 months prior to when Mr. Brunker came on board. The reason for the motion to compel was not his personnel file. It had to do with Mr. Brunker's counsel wanting to delve deeper into the reasons why Mr. Zoltan Szabo had been terminated. Schwanz allowed Mr. Szabo to testify that he had been terminated for something dealing with dishonesty, I believe. The motion to compel related to the information that Mr. Brunker still wanted as to his reasons for his termination. The undisputed evidence was that Mr. Szabo didn't have anything to do with Mr. Brunker's termination or any discipline, never spoke to Mr. Ramey. So the motion to compel was really on that piece, not anything other than Mr. Zoltan Szabo's testimony. So that was the issue that the district court confronted with the motion to compel.
Now, Judge Moody decided this case on the grounds that MS, in this case, according to him, was intermittent or episodic, and therefore it was not disabled. Your defense is primarily that Mr. Brunker didn't do his job very well or couldn't do his job, unrelated to the MS. Now, can we affirm this judgment on those grounds when Judge Moody hasn't even addressed them?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, if you look at what Judge Moody found, he went through...
I mean, in the first place, your opponent says that your allegations of a failure to do the job are not uncontested. So that would seem to raise one problem. And there may be others, but if there's a sort of a disjuncture here because Judge Moody didn't discuss any of these things that you're talking about.
That is correct. The district court basically held or only held that Mr. Brunker was not disabled under the ADA and then did not decide the other issues. But I do believe that not only does the evidence show that Mr. Brunker was not disabled at the time of his termination because his symptoms were at most episodic or intermittent. And if you look at the testimony and the evidence relating to September 03, at that time Mr. Brunker had been working without any type of restrictions for almost 4 months. He managed his route without any help of his coworkers, and he actually testified that during that time he finished his route either in the same time or in less time than he had prior to him going out on leave in February of 03. He never complained to any of his supervisors about having problems, or Mr. Ramey, I should say, about having problems getting his route completed.
Boy,
his problems flared up again in July and August, and he went up to Mayo's. That's why I was asking about what was the report from Mayo's. I haven't heard too much about that.
I know there was some discussion about Dr. Kruger. If you look at Dr. Kruger.
In this case you cited involves arthritis. I don't know whether arthritis is comparable to MS, but I mean this Moore case, I think you cited three. And there are other cases, of course, that don't say, just because diseases are intermittent doesn't per se exclude them from being disabling, does it?
No, but if you look at Dr. Kruger, again, going back, he noted that during the September time frame that while Mr. Brunker had experienced dizziness once in a while, it was less of a problem, and Brunker told him he was feeling better. And so you've got those two pieces in addition to Mr. Brunker's testimony that shows that the district court correctly held that he wasn't disabled under the ADA. If you look at the issue with whether Ramey regarded Mr. Brunker as disabled, there was no reason for Mr. Ramey to have regarded Mr. Brunker as disabled. He was working without restrictions. He testified he never saw Mr. Brunker having problems physically doing his job.
Did he watch him 24 hours a day? What was going on there?
No, but he would see him.
Just think about... I'm sorry, you go ahead.
No.
Go ahead.
He would have daily contact with Mr. Brunker, and in fact, he would probably... I believe his testimony was that he saw him on a daily basis.
But, you see, episodic means it can come upon you at any time. You don't know when it's going to hit you. Someone can be feeling absolutely fine and then suddenly poor vision comes upon the individual, the leg goes, the arm goes, the shaking begins. Very, very difficult.
But Mr. Brunker's burden on the regarded as this court in Amadio versus Ford made clear, it's not enough that Mr. Brunker can show that certain individuals knew he was suffering from some type of impairment. He has to show that Mr. Ramey, who is the undisputed decision maker here, felt that he was limited in one or more of his major life activities. And that's just not the case. In fact, Mr. Brunker's testimony was that when he asked to go off on leave, that he felt that Mr. Ramey had every intention of bringing him back to work. So there was no reason, there's no evidence to suggest that Mr. Ramey felt that Mr. Brunker was unable physically to do the job as route manager.
Well, you know, you tried to explain away that code 48, that unable to perform essential job functions. But here we are. We're on summary judgment. Why should we take Ramey's word for it? It says what it says. You know, Ramey may want to convince a jury that he meant something else. But why shouldn't we construe it in favor of Mr. Brunker at this stage of the proceedings?
Well, I think that if you look at that, the code 48 was used, as well as code 30, unsatisfactory performance. And certainly Mr. Ramey, when asked specifically in his deposition whether he felt Brunker was physically unable to do the job, he said absolutely not. He voluntarily decided he wasn't going to see his customers. This was an individual that after being told, talked to about three times about making sure his customers were serviced, he failed to go out and service hundreds of his customers. And not once did he come to Mr. Ramey and say, I can't do this, I'm having problems. No, he just decided on his own that he wasn't going to service his customers.
What is this about, you know, the customers having been removed from his little computer?
There is no evidence to suggest that that did in fact occur. In fact, when Mr. Brunker came to Mr. Ramey and asked for time off, Mr. Ramey said, fine. He didn't have enough time to have vacation. He wasn't eligible up for FMLA, but Mr. Ramey allowed him to take the time off. But he said, make sure your route books are in order. The route books are very important because they not only give directions, but they also give information about customer preferences. He even put someone with Mr. Brunker to make sure that his route books were all in order. Mr. Brunker decided when he left to go off on leave, Mr. Ramey got complaints about the fact that his route book was not in order. And so he then went out and ran the route himself, okay, and discovered that he had not serviced hundreds of customers over a six-week to three-month period. So with respect to customers were not there, he had every opportunity to straighten that issue out when we gave him a driver prior to him going off on leave. I believe my time is out. I would just request that you affirm.
You have a minute.
Thank you. I would just request that this court affirm the district court's decision on granting Schwann's summary judgment, that you also affirm the court's denial of the motion to compel and the motion, in part, the denial of the motion to reconsider and denying Brunker's motions to strike. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Ms. Hearn?
3 minutes.
I love the statement, allowed him to take time off. He was terminated. His effective termination date was September 9th, the day he left for the Mayo Clinic. If the termination date was on September 22nd, the day he returned, when Ramey had a chance to go and look at his route to see if he was servicing customers, then the effective date of his termination would have been September 22nd, the day he returned. They terminated him because he was going to the Mayo Clinic for unpaid, and he took unpaid leave. They didn't allow him to go to the Mayo Clinic. Also, if you look at their own supplemental appendix, they gave Barry Dwyer a chance when he was not servicing customers, the alleged falsifying his timesheets or whatever, on page 1294, May 30th, 2003. They said, spoke to Barry about cell time and effort. 4 hours will not get job done. He must show me he's willing to help himself, and so he can help himself also. If you look on 1775, actually, the appendix page is 1774. That's on our supplemental appendix, I apologize. In 1775, you would see also their rival times on the stop log sheets. They're similar to Brunker's. Dwyer was not terminated. That's their comparator in May of 2003. And they didn't give us the personnel file to see if he has any disabilities or anything else. That, for that very reason, the 56F motion must be granted.
Can I just go on a little bit on this discovery? I share the unease, I think, of my colleagues on potential limitation. But I noticed that in the order of the magistrate, in recognizing the discretion we have to allow trial judges. With regard to this individual, Tito?
Yes.
I guess the initial response is they don't know anyone by that name?
My client said he did work with someone named Tito.
I understand. And when they said they don't have anyone by that name, you still persisted, is that right?
I asked my client again.
But your client, I'm trying to get a sense of the dynamic, Ms. Hearn, between, were you the trial counsel?
Yes, I was.
Between you and the magistrate. Because magistrate has pretty strong language about overreaching here. So when the response comes back, there is no Tito, you check with your client, he says there is.
Yes.
And then you renew it, is that it?
Well, when I did the motion to compel, I did add it to it.
Okay.
But we also
let me move on to Szabo. Now, Szabo, I understand Brunker testified he treated him fairly.
Yes.
Is that correct?
He testified to that.
And your client had no complaints against Mr. Szabo, did he?
May I respond?
Of course. This is a dialogue I'm having with you.
Yes. Well, he may have not had any complaints with him. However, the testimony in his deposition stated that Mr. Szabo's deposition that he was a bad employee. My client was dishonest. That and so I had. I think I should have a right, if that's what the witness that they're going to use at trial and in summary judgment purposes, to say my client was not performing his job, to especially at trial, to see what is in his personnel file, his supervisor file, and see why he was actually terminated. Because he himself was terminated for some type of dishonest act.
Exactly. All right.
What evidence is there in the record that Brunker, in fact, called properly on his customer?
We have from my client's testimony, number one, which I understand that's not, you know, he said, she said. There's also route manager's affidavits, route manager Hughes, Barry Dwyer, Jackie Spratley. They all testified they went with him on his routes and said he was servicing his customers. He was updating his route books. He was adhering to the dress code. He was doing everything everyone else did, and other individuals were not disciplined, which is in my brief, that Brunker was, who were not disabled.
Did the discovery start under the district judge and then was assigned to a magistrate, or is that the practice that all discovery before Judge Moody automatically goes to the magistrate?
Automatically goes to the magistrate, and we followed the court's magistrate's mandate to do the 56F because they expanded their reasons.
Thank you, Ms. Hearn.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.